Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Late last night, all but two Senate Republicans voted to defund public media. $1.1 billion in funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting had already been approved. Republicans have taken unprecedented action to eliminate this funding. The bill now goes to the House and is expected to be signed by tomorrow. On today's Your Call, we'll find out what this means for public radio stations across the country. What does this mean for KALW? It means we will immediately lose $400,000. This is a targeted attempt to dismantle a national network of independent media organizations and journalists across the country. Small rural stations say they might have to shut down. Others say they will have to cut staffing. Joining us to talk more about this are three guests. James Cass is executive director of KALW Public Media. Hi, James. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose.
We're also joined by Loris Taylor, president and CEO of Native Public Media. They promote the self-determination of Indigenous peoples through media access, storytelling, and ownership. Hi, Loris. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, everyone. I'm pleased to be here.
Thank you. We're also joined by Craig Aaron, president and co-CEO of Free Press. They fight for honest, independent, fearless media across the country. Hi, Craig. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me back, Rose.
Well, James, let's start off with you. So many people are wondering what this is going to mean for KALW. And unfortunately, this means we're going to immediately lose $400,000 once the bill is signed.
Yeah, it's actually a little over $400,000. And I think it's important to say that that's annually for at least the next 2 years. The $1.1 billion you reference is over 2 years. So it's $550 million a year for public broadcasting. A little bit over $400,000 of that is allocated for KLW. So that, you know, that's a pretty, it's not going to kill us, but it's going to make us make a lot of tough decisions. And it's certainly going to limit what we can do.
Can you elaborate on that a bit, James? I'm already hearing from listeners who say, what does this mean for shows like Your Call, Cross Currents, and everything we hear on KALW? Have any of these decisions been made?
Well, I mean, to be honest, Rose, and to be honest, listeners of KALW, in a lot of ways, it's up to the listeners of KALW. It really depends on what the people in the Bay Area want and care about. I'm committed to not doing layoffs, and I'm committed to keeping our local programming happening, and I'm committed to making sure we can do as much global and national news as possible. But a lot of that is going to be dependent on the people of the Bay Area. We're not sitting on an extra $400,000. But, you know, Rose, you have been doing such incredible work for so long and frankly been under-resourced in doing so. And we've been trying to resource the organization better. And this is a real blow to that. So, you know, our hope is that we keep it going. We keep pushing as hard as we can. And our hope is that people really step up and want to help us fight. Like, you know, standing with KLW matters now more than ever. Like, you know, I know that Loris can talk about what's happening to Native stations and more rural stations. It's not 50% of our budget. It's about 7 or 8% of our annual budget. But that's a lot of money. So it really depends on what we're able to do and you know, whether or not people are willing to stand up against what you so fantastically reported on, because this is Project 2025 being rolled out. It's what it is.
Exactly. And we should say Your Call only exists because of your support. And the station really does put a lot of resources behind this show, because Project 2025, for example, we decided last year to dedicate an entire series to Project 2025 because we felt that it wasn't getting the attention it deserves. And so that is what you are funding by giving to a station like KALW. I'll ask you quickly in a minute, James, about what happened behind the scenes, because this is really unprecedented. But Loris, you are president and CEO of Native Public Media. I've read a couple of interviews you've given. You say this could be devastating for Native stations across the country. Tell us more. What can people expect?
Well, we are facing the unraveling of the communications network across Indian country. We have 36 stations out of our 60 stations that will be impacted due to the loss of CPB funding. And here's what at stake. We're not only going to lose CPB funding, we're going to lose our connection to the public radio satellite system. We're going to lose some of the benefits in being affiliated with CPB, which includes licensing to CSAT, APSCAP, and BMI. And there are other losses as well. Locally, these stations are hyper-local. They cover 15 states across the United States. I think the 36 that I'm talking about cover at least 11 of those states. And so we're looking at darkness. These stations provide hyper-local programming. They provide news. They provide information about health. I'll just give you an example. During COVID-19, these stations were first informers. They inform tribal citizens about hospital protocols, about where to find groceries, whether there were roadblocks between nations, which tribal nations, because, for example, the Hopi Reservation is inside the Navajo Reservation. There was just a lot of real life-saving information that was given during that period. We're also going to lose the capability of providing emergency alerts. And I'll give you one example. We just worked really, really hard over the last 2 years to have the Federal Communications Commission approve the missing and endangered persons alert. Why? Because we have a pandemic of missing and murdered individuals across Indian country. This alert will go live September 2025. And can you imagine that we may not have our 36 stations live on air to participate in this rollout come September. So there's just so much at stake. It's so hard to just even wrap my head around the loss that we're facing right now.
Oh, that's just devastating. You know, Loris, when these deals are made behind the scenes, you know, you really find out how little gifts are given to certain politicians. And according to reporting, Senator Mike Rounds was talking with Russ Vogt, who's the guy who's just slashing all of these programs and social services. And he said he got a promise of millions of dollars for Native radio stations. Do you have any information on that? Because once I read that in the New York Times, I thought, well, what does that mean? I mean, does that mean that a Native station that they perceive to be unbiased will not get the funding? Who will decide who gets this money?
Well, I think that's the problem. We don't know about a great deal about what that deal was about. It was posted on X, and I don't subscribe to X, so someone had to forward it to me. But here's what I learned, and I know this only by working with congressional leaders for over several decades. The new Green Deal monies lack the congressional authority to include broadcasters. Those funds were designated for climate and energy infrastructure projects, so it's not for public media. And the concerns that I had around this deal was, is it legal to redirect these funds from the Department of Energy to some place? Is it the Bureau of Indian Affairs or is it the Department of Interior? We don't have enough information. Procedurally, I think it's very complex. Politically, it might be unviable because, you know, there might be other stakeholders that may have a say about where these monies are going. And so we still don't have answers today. I know that people want to know what all the details are about this deal. I don't know. All I know is that there's no clear pathway that has been demonstrated to me that this is going to be viable, that it's going to be successful, that it can be implemented. And furthermore, I think these are just one-time monies, as far as I know. It's not a permanent setup. But what I find interesting is that we're in a crossfire between ideologies. We have, this is really about a fight. If you watched a Senate hearing yesterday, it's really about ideology. So there's a lot of people very mad at some of the big media houses. And I feel that small stations like tribal stations were caught up in this crossfire and nobody's listening to really what's at stake.
Loris Taylor is president and CEO of Native Public Media. Over the past 18 years, they've grown a network of 57 Native radio stations and 4 television stations. We're also joined today by James Cass, executive director of KALW Public Media, and Craig Aaron, president and co-CEO of Free Press. James, I know we have to let you go soon. Can you talk about how unprecedented this is? A lot of people are just hearing about rescissions for the first time. So this $1.1 billion in funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was already approved by Democrats and Republicans. And so Republicans are taking unprecedented action to eliminate this funding.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I just want to pick up very quickly on something Loris was just talking about, because if you listened to the hearings, whether it was the Senate yesterday or the House last week, you know, they're bashing NPR. NPR is an institution based in Washington, D.C. And that's different to me than National Public Radio, which is a network of 1,000 different stations across the country. Nobody listens to NPR. They listen to their local station and they get from their local station what they need from their local station because it's created by people from the community. So, you know, as Loris was saying, this is really desecrating a national network that we all rely on for news, for information, for partnership. The rescission, apparently there hasn't been a rescission since the Clinton administration. DPB had been set up in a very special way to get 2 years of forward funding. So again, this was money that had already been approved for fiscal year 26 and fiscal year 2027. And the reason they set that up was to make sure that it didn't have political opportunism to take advantage of it. So it was really to sort of shield it from politics. So it was funded 2 years forward so that new administrations, new Congresses couldn't come in and sort of mess with public broadcasting money. So that clearly was just undone. This, you know, what you heard some of the Republicans complaining about, Susan Collins specifically, but then of course on many of the Democrats, was a bipartisan group had passed the appropriations. So the Republicans and Democrats had worked together, and then a Republican administration comes in and single-handedly undoes it. And, you know, again, this is between the two things, foreign aid and public broadcasting, you're talking a drop in the bucket of the federal budget. Like, public broadcasting is less than 0.1% of the annual budget. So it's not about saving money. It's about ideology. And it's about, frankly, cutting off pathways for people to be better informed about what's going on. So it's unprecedented in multiple ways. But I think the thing that's most dangerous is the blanket attack on media. And it's media that's not going to acquiesce the way we just saw ABC and the way we saw Paramount do. This is independent, locally controlled media. And the whole best way to cut it off is to take its money away. And, you know, as Loris was saying, for many stations, CPB accounts for 50 to 60 to 70% of their budget. Those stations will, many of those stations, if funding comes back in 2 years, and who knows, it may, depending on what happens at the midterm election, my guess is we're going to see hundreds of stations either dead or on their last leg.
And James, final thoughts from you. What's going to be happening at KALW in the coming weeks? I mean, this bill is expected to be signed by Trump on Friday. Yeah. And again, KALW is going to lose over $400,000 immediately in the next 2 years.
Yeah, $400,000 a year. That's been part of our budget. Now, again, I don't want to turn this into a pitch for funding. But for the next few weeks, and really for the next few months, we're going to try and galvanize the community of the Bay Area who are regular listeners to KLW and believers in the importance of independent media and arts and culture programming and journalism and training of a new generation of journalists, you know, working with incarcerated individuals and young people and people who represent communities who are not heard on the air. We're going to be trying to galvanize everybody to build up our support. We cannot afford to lose $400,000 a year. But we don't want to do what we've heard other stations already doing, which is layoffs and sort of cutting of really critical local programs. So We're going to fight as hard as we can, and we're going to ask people to fight with us.
And you can do that by going to kalw.org. James Cass is Executive Director of KALW Public Media. Thanks so much for joining us, James.
Thank you, Rose. And thank you, everyone else, for joining.
Thank you. And you can learn more about how these cuts will affect KALW. Again, we're going to immediately lose $400,000 per year once this bill is signed. So if you're just tuning in, late last night, all but two Senate Republicans voted to defund public media, Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. The money, $1.1 billion, was already approved, so Republicans took unprecedented action to eliminate this funding. The bill now goes to the House, and Trump is expected to sign it by tomorrow. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Loris Taylor is president and CEO of Native Public Media. Craig Aaron is president and co-CEO of Free Press. They say media and technology are essential to our democracy, and they fight to ensure they're used for justice. Thank you for patiently waiting, Craig. Free Press and other organizations had a nationwide call on Monday to really focus on what's at stake. And I was struck by a few of the guests who work at public radio stations who say this is going to really affect people's ability to get information when there's an emergency. And others said that they're going to have to lay off reporters. So what are you hearing from public media stations across the country?
Yeah, as James talked about and Loris as well, these cuts will be devastating to many local stations. And the result is going to be in a lot of places. And I certainly join the call urging people to step up in an emergency moment to support places like KALW. But the reality is, in a lot of places, this is going to lead to job loss. People working in the local community to give voice to the local community, to cover issues, to do accountability, they're looking to lose. They're looking at losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods, and we're all looking at losing the information they would actually provide. And that's the connection. One of the reasons we got together with groups across public media and across the global health sector, which was a huge amount of the money that was cut in this bill, is because of that connection. The only way people are going to know what's happening to these international programs that stop and prevent disease is because they're learning about it from the kind of reporting that public media does. The only way people are going to know that their community is in danger when it comes to natural disasters and other kinds of emergencies is because we've set up a public media system to fill in those blanks, to provide that life-saving information. This is a bill being debated and voted on in the House of Representatives at any minute, that is going to kill people. It is going to cost them their lives. That is on the hands of these legislators who are pretending this has something to do with, you know, fiscal controls, austerity. But the result is going to be people losing their jobs and people losing their lives. The stakes are that high. And it's why it's such a disaster that, you know, the limited ways this was set up to try to stop political interference, to give the money in advance, to have an independent agency supposedly shielded or partially shielded from political interference, it shows those protections just weren't good enough. And for purely partisan reasons and with a slew of empty promises to maybe find the money somewhere else and maybe give it to a few stations if you happen to know the right people or you're on the right side of a senator or a government official, that's not the kind of public media system we need. And I really think fundamentally, thousands and thousands and thousands of people have been calling Congress because they recognize that this attack on public media is connected to all these larger attacks, is connected to this larger attack on democracy and basic accountability for our government. And this was a stress test of that, and unfortunately one that the supposedly co-equal branch of government in Congress absolutely failed this week in clawing back at this money and endangering this infrastructure at a moment where people are so desperate for that trustworthy information, that independent reporting, and also that kind of life-saving information as they look at all the dangers that are coming, weather, climate change, you name it. That's all put in jeopardy by these kinds of cuts. and really for nothing. No great savings, tax cuts for the rich, and just a lack of accountability at an administration that is increasingly out of control and increasingly punitive toward anyone who would try to hold it accountable.
Well, Craig, we just did a devastating show on the cuts to USAID. We are already seeing people die from preventable diseases. Sexual assault, human trafficking is on the rise. We've done shows about the Medicaid cuts. We changed today's show about food stamp cuts to focusing on what's happening with public media. NAMI just posted, the National Association of Mental Illness just posted that the Trump administration got rid of the suicide hotline today for LGBTQ people. 988 is still available. I mean, this is just head spinning, Craig. And I'm wondering, given that you have a lot of experience lobbying on Capitol Hill, I mean, a lot of people thought that this bill was not going to pass. And then others said, this is not your father's Republican Party. This is a very different party. And Donald Trump has a lot of power. People are getting death threats when they go up against him. So can you just talk about how things have really changed in DC?
Yeah, I mean, it is remarkable. I never thought I'd see the day as someone who spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill where the US Congress would so willingly give up their power, when they would so willingly say, oh, we already voted for this, but you can just undo it, all under, meeting met with empty promises, like what I think they did to Senator Rounds in South Dakota, and threats. I don't know whether they're empty or not. They feel them to be very real, but we're at a moment when the people who wear suits to work every day and have fancy offices and access to C-SPAN cameras, those are the people we need to step up. There are a lot of other people who are having to hide out because ICE is coming through their neighborhood, who are worried about their family members who don't have a megaphone, who don't have access to a microphone. And we need our political leaders to be stepping up and standing up. And that is where they are failing. And I think that's what we've seen in this Congress more than any other. No independent voices, or very few. All it takes is the president going on Truth Social and saying, if you don't support this bill, I'm not going to support you. And they immediately get in line. We see commercial media under threat of absolutely preposterous lawsuits that have no business in a court of law. But before they ever get to court, the corporate leaders say, well, you know what? We'll literally bribe the president and his allies and his businesses in order to make these lawsuits go away, even if it means giving up our journalistic independence, even if it means not fighting back. And the Republican caucus have sort of become zombies. They'll just go on along with whatever this administration wants, whether it's Elon Musk coming in with a chainsaw to all the programs they approved, whether it comes to these, marquee programs. They were able to save one in this debate, the PEPFAR program that supports HIV and AIDS, but devastating, devastating cuts everywhere else, all because, no, you have to be on the team that's cutting. That's not been the way it has historically worked. It's certainly not been the way it's worked when Democrats were in office, but it's this. I don't know if I like these analogies, but this mafia or mob-like attitude. Well, if you know the right guy, maybe we can help you out. Yeah, we'll take a little bit from this other program that has nothing to do, and we might give it to you, but you better go ahead and get in line first. That's the way this is operating. Can you exploit your personal relationships and your demonstrations of loyalty to get a few things for your home district instead of building programs designed to be free from political interference, to encourage public debate? That's not what this administration wants, and Congress is going along with it in truly devastating ways. It's very easy to do demolition, and that's what we're experiencing right now with this administration. They're taking a sledgehammer or a chainsaw to everything, and they're tearing it down. Rebuilding it is much, much harder, as anybody knows who's ever had to do a home improvement project. Much, much harder, much, much more difficult. And that's what they're counting on. They're counting on breaking these systems and making them very hard to put back together, even if they lose power. If they can make the government not work for people, if they can leave people more uninformed, if they can leave people sicker, and that's what they're doing, cutting mental health support, cutting cancer research, all of this lines up to making life so much harder for people and pushing them to pay less attention to what the billionaires are doing and what the powerful are doing. And that's where public media fits in because they recognize they can't squeeze it in the same way they can squeeze CBS and ABC and even NBC. So they come after its core funding, its variability, as Loris hinted at, to connect to satellite networks, to broadcast out into the world. If they can destroy that, then people won't have that information. And most people aren't paying that close attention. They don't understand that this means their local channel is going to be turned off, that their local voices aren't going to be there, the local accents, the local music, that that's what goes away with these kind of policy decisions. It isn't about one story or another. It's about the people who actually go to work every day to provide this essential service not being able to do it. And this administration is heavily invested in that because they would love to replace everywhere they can any voices of independence with their own propaganda, with their own brands, their own conservative media, and they're going after it wherever they can.
And before we go to break, Loris, what would you like to add?
Well, I just want to mention that invisibility is not a superpower. It never has been. And I think when you exist on the margins of visibility in terms of media, you don't exist. So I think what I hope that we can do is to not suffer from the collateral damage in this national fight that's going on. So rather than scrapping CPB, I agree with Craig. I think it's better to do reforms than to tear down or dismantle an entire system. CPB was specifically set up to manage monies from Congress for public media. And I think what we need to work towards is to preserve these infrastructure assets for communities. Otherwise, we become media deserts. We have a lot of those across Indian country already. I think we can work on reducing red tape, looking at ways that where public media, which is already hyperlocal, to ramp up their civic engagement. Public health is civic engagement, and we know this. We want to be a part of the informed societies around the globe. We want to be able to have capabilities that will make us thrive and make sure that the tribal communities are robust and healthy. So our stations are just not nice to have. They're a must have. And so I'm hoping that Congress will revisit this today and talk about it more from the human factor. At the end of the day, it's not just about the hardware, it's about people. And when people lose their voice or their power to speak or to be heard, that's a big deal. I mean, we fought for that for Indian country for many, many years. This network that we have took decades to build, and for it to be dismantled overnight, like in reality, that's really hard to wrap your mind around because it's going to have an impact. We moved away from darkness. I mean, we didn't exist before in the media sphere, but we're here now. So I'm hoping that this is not a huge gobble up of spectrum and other assets for just those people that think they deserve it. We're part of the American fabric, and universal communications should be for everyone, including tribal citizens.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Loris Taylor, President and CEO of Native Public Media. Over the past 18 years, they've grown a network of 57 Native radio stations and 4 television stations. We're also joined today by Craig Aaron, President and Co-CEO of Free Press. They have been doing so much work around raising awareness and trying to stop these cuts. Free Press fights to ensure that media and technology are used for justice. And just to let you know, in case you're just tuning in, late last night, all but 2 Senate Republicans voted to defund public media. So we're talking about $1.1 billion in funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It was already approved, but Republicans took unprecedented action to eliminate that funding. The bill now goes to the House, It's expected to be signed tomorrow, and this means that KALW is going to immediately lose $400,000 a year over the next 2 years. If you'd like to join us, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. If you'd like to talk about what public media means to you, I think so many of us take it for granted. I mean, think about the Bay Area. We've got KALW, KQED, KPFA. I mean, you could just change the dial and you get such rich programming. We're really lucky. It's not like that in so many parts of the country where they might have, you know, one station that provides emergency information. So this is so important, especially when you think about stations that might have to shut down. And we'll be continuing to cover this over the next couple of weeks. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about what defunding public media will mean for radio stations across the country. Today we're joined by Loris Taylor, President and CEO of Native Public Media, Craig Aaron, President and Co-CEO of Free Press, and now we'd like to welcome Peggy Berryhill to the show. Peggy is General Manager of KGUA in Gualala, California. They carry Your Call. Peggy has been in journalism for 52 years. She started at KPFA and KPU back in 1972. Peggy is known as the First Lady of Native Radio. Hi, Peggy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey there. Thank you for inviting me to talk about this ominous news.
Well, Peggy, you've been at this for a long time. Can you talk about, I mean, this is unprecedented. Talk about what this means for public radio stations across the country.
Well, I think more than what it means for public radio stations is terrible, but what it means for the public in public radio is really terrible. We're talking about audiences and communities, small and large communities around the United States, losing their own personal voices, the information, potentially the not only safety information, weather information, but the people that their neighbors and friends learning about what's going on around them and having this interconnection with community stations all over the United States. It's almost unnatural to want to cut off the voice of American citizens talking with each other. And it's wrong.
And Loris, I know you have to leave in a minute, and thanks again for joining us at the last minute. I was struck by an interview that Francine Blythe Lewis, CEO of the Lincoln, Nebraska-based Native American video programming producer Vision Maker Media, shared with the PBS NewsHour. She said, for Indian country in general, 80% of the communities are rural, and their only access to national news, story sharing, is through PBS stations or public radio. She says, if the clawback happens, I would say a good 90% of those stations will cease to exist. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do agree. I believe radio and television are super important to tribal communities. Let me just give you a picture of Alaska. We have about a dozen stations there. Some of these communities don't even have roads into them. So they're isolated communities. These individuals, if they need medical help, have to fly out of their communities. And radio is one way that they are connected, not just internally to their village, but also to the outside world. And if you can imagine that, I came from the Hopi Reservation. We didn't have radio or television or even electricity or running water. So we've come a long way. To get our own radio station was a huge celebration. I remember talking to tribal members when we were installing KUYI radio of what they wanted to hear on their radio station. And they said, we want to hear news. not like the one that we talk about around the dinner table, meaning real news, unbiased, balanced, truthful, number one selection. I didn't believe that that perhaps was true, so we did another survey with the same answer. So we know that tribal communities, they want to hear about the public affairs, the things that matter to them, that are relevant to them. They want to hear news about what's happening within their own community, what's happening outside. They want to be connected and they want to be informed, because we know that public health is civic health. They want to know where to vote, where groceries are being sold, who's born, what the protocols are at the nearby institutions that serve them, like hospitals and law enforcement and courts and things like that. So it matters. And to strip away an infrastructure that has served them well for a number of years now, that has elevated nation building across Indian country, that has supported sovereignty, that's the loss that we're talking about. We're talking about a loss to tribal nations that for hundreds of years that have moved through different kinds of evolution within their own communities to self-governance and to self-determination, being acknowledged by the federal government, because we're talking about inherently sovereign nations. This is a big deal, and I'm sorry that it's come to this day. Hmm.
Well, I'm so sorry that we had to meet like this. To think that 90% of these stations could go away is just absolutely devastating. Loris, thank you for your work. Thank you for joining us. And, we'd love to have you back, because I'm sure that in the coming days, you're going to be hearing from so many of these Native stations that you all work with.
Thank you so much for having me. And hello to Craig and to my longtime partner and colleague, Peggy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Loris Taylor is president and CEO.
Loris.
Of Native Public Media. Over the past 18 years, they've grown a network of 57 Native radio stations and 4 television stations. We're also joined by Craig Aaron, president and co-CEO of Free Press. Peggy Berryhill is general manager of KGUA in Gualala, California. They air Your Call. Peggy's been at this for 52 years, starting at KPFA and KPU back in 1972. Peggy, you were one of the first Native journalists at NPR. I can't even imagine how this makes you feel, to think that 90% of rural Native stations might cease to exist. It's hard to wrap your head around that.
It's very hard to wrap my head around. It's just unfathomable, because, it's the voices. Again, it's the communities that are losing out. Not just the talent, not just the skills and the stations, but many of us in public radio, community radio, television stations have fought for decades so that our communities could be represented, have their own stations, their own voices. It's not just the entertainment value, but the importance during weather. Here on the coast, we have major storms. Our highways can be closed off. Sometimes pieces of the Highway 1 fall off. All of these things are so important. This isn't just about playing music. It's not that. It's about community and the multitude of types of communities that are in all of our areas. We are not a one-size-fits-all station. Any of us, we are all working towards serving the many voices, the generations, and the populations within our communities. So it's a major tragedy. I mean, to think that, you could go to your radio and not find KLW there, not find KGUA, not find, any of our stations there. Suddenly, where are you going to hear what's happening in your neighborhood? Where are you going to hear not just the news and the weather, but where are you going to hear what the events are happening? What's important in the schools? What your neighbors and friends may be dealing with in health issues? It's all major. It's not just entertainment that's coming to our communities.
Craig, Peggy makes such a good point about what this means for the public. And I think a lot of people are going to be thinking about this over the next couple days, because we are in an unprecedented media situation right now, where we've got information coming at us from so many, in so many directions, unlike any time before. You know, you can go on Instagram and get information, YouTube, social media, the cable shows, 24/7 news. But there's something so unique and special about public media. We don't think about clickbait. There's no one in an office telling us on this show what to talk about or what not to talk about. We bring on people who've never been on the radio before. If we talk about minimum wage or farm workers, we actually bring on the farm workers and the minimum wage workers. You hardly ever see them on the cable shows. So can you talk about what makes public media so special? I think it's easy to forget that because we're just inundated with information on a regular basis.
Right. We're overwhelmed with information, but it's not necessarily the information we need to improve our lives. It's not necessarily the information we need to know what's happening in our communities, what's being done in our name. It's very often not information that actually reflects our communities, speaks to us directly, looks like us. Public media at its best can do all of those things. I mean, Peggy's career is a testimony to voices being put on the air, voices of elders being captured and recorded, that no one else is going to do that job. That's not what this modern media system obsessed with are, you know, just capturing our eyeballs for a little bit longer, making us angry, sending us down these rabbit holes of information. There's capable of finding good things there, but people are hungry for someone to help curate and make sense of the world. That's what public media can do. All that national media may fill up our inboxes and overwhelm us, but it doesn't actually tell us what's happening in our community, what's happening down the street, who's responsible, who they're supposed to call, where do you get the basic information you need to participate in your community, to have access to important kinds of care, to where do you go in a natural disaster? These are all things public media can and does provide. And that ultimately is what's put in jeopardy by these kind of cuts, is that kind of community grounded, local, independent voices. The kind of media, if you actually ask people what they want, that's what they'll tell you they want, because they recognize the public good that goes beyond even if you read it or click or listen in, because it actually connects and brings community together. That's why we need a public media system that isn't just about serving the needs of shareholders, or isn't about just following the direction of those in power in Washington. That's what this vote says. We're going to just do that. We're just going to support people who are on board with a particular political program. But public media at its core, and the public media we will need to rebuild after this devastating loss, is one that is actually locally grounded and independent and shielded in much more fundamental ways from political whims than what we have now. But that's the kind of public media that can actually support and sustain a democracy, and a democracy that everyone actually gets to participate in and have a voice. That's what we need to start rebuilding today, despite what happened. But it is going to be hard, because they've taken such a sledgehammer to what we already have now, which itself was inadequate to that task. So we have our work cut out for us, but there can be times here at Rock Bottom, these moments of clarity where it says we can and should have something different. And we're going to need that if we're actually going to continue to have a democracy.
And we should point out, Craig, we're talking about taxpayer dollars here. U.S. taxpayers, 100%. we taxpayers only spend $1.60 a year. That's what goes to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, $1.60. This is far less than other wealthy countries. I was just reading this morning about the UK, Sweden. They're about $100 per person. So this also deserves more attention. I mean, this is hardly any money. And yet, look at the good that it does.
And people think it's more because they value it so much. They assume we're spending 10, 20, 30 times as much. But if we even spent two or three times as much, we could have so much more media that actually represents community, that actually looks like the great diversity of this country. And this attack that's coming from the federal government, from Washington, from the Trump administration, is really all grounded in denying that reality, denying that there are these amazing diverse communities, finding local voices, local stories, letting people tell their own story, which is what public media can do at its best. All of that comes under attack, and basically for nothing, for the cost of a cup of coffee.
Not even these days.
We could have so much more. Yeah, yeah. And not a very good cup of coffee anymore, I guess.
You know, Craig, I agree with you completely, because it's our local voices that are so important. That's why they listen to us, our tiny community radio stations, along with our, you know, larger network of stations. They want to hear what's happening, not only in the larger world, but put it into perspective for their community, their neighborhoods, and put in perspective by people who are from their neighborhoods and communities, and for those generations that are coming up, not just you know, well-done generic information from stars, but from local people who know what this means, what all of this, as you said so well, democracy. It's about democracy and all the voices, all the people, and these coming generations that need the information to not just enjoy life, but to be making informed decisions about what's happening within our democratic communities.
Peggy, I think James also made a good point earlier in the hour about how Republicans constantly just talked about NPR, NPR. They had Catherine Mara, the NPR CEO, testify on Capitol Hill and, you know, tried to get her in these gotcha moments. And James made a good point that this is about the public radio stations. And yet this has been something that Republicans have been wanting to do for decades. So where do we go from here, Peggy? I mean, just to let listeners know again that KALW will immediately lose $400,000 a year over the next 2 years. This is just KALW. We've been hearing that native stations will cease to exist because of all of this. Where do we go from here, Peggy?
Oh, my goodness. You know, that those numbers, you know, you have to go on and however you can, obviously. I mean, it takes money to continue institutions, but it's the voices, it's the microphones. I mean, we're a tiny little station. We are self-supporting in whatever way we can. And so we're able to do it for our communities. Obviously, if you're in a larger community and you need a lot more infrastructure, that infrastructure costs money. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for people to think about that. We're not talking about paying big salaries or fancy offices. We're talking a lot of times about just the basic overhead so that we can keep these microphones going, so we can have reporters, if that's what we have on staff, to keep our communities informed and safe. And yes, we need entertainment as well from voices that we recognize and from cultures that we want to hear more about. And this is about all kinds of people within our country. This is about Native issues. This is about African American issues. This is about the white guys. This is about the Asian. These are older, younger generations. And it's not just news and information again, it can also be entertainment. Where are we going to find this variety? Where are we going to be able to turn on our station and hear a voice that sounds like someone who sounds like us or is talking about something that we can relate to, and helping our future generations continue to be educated and to grow healthy and to take part in communities? I mean, that's what community and public mean. That's what the importance is here. I can't imagine, you know, not having it, not being able, someone like me, being able to walk into a station, KPFA, back in the 70s. It was unheard of. We had some local, not local, but national, maybe newspapers. And that was really the main way that we got our voices out. Important to have press, newspapers, but even more important is having these microphones open to our communities and hearing the voices of people that we can trust with the information. It's major. It's not just, you know, this, I don't know how the it's being portrayed. We're being portrayed by the Trump administration. But It's so important. Right, Craig?
Yeah, Craig,
I couldn't agree more.
your final thoughts. We've got about a minute left.
I mean, I think my final thoughts are, as big a setback as this is, that we really have to get serious about the kind of public media system we want to build. And we have to be putting the groundwork in now, to demand something very different than what just happened here. I think the public media system writ large has spent a lot of time getting kicked in the teeth and being ground down and made smaller and smaller. And we have to start getting more expansive in our vision and thinking about how do we support the things we value so much? How do we support the journalists and producers who are going to work every day to provide this unique content? In the short term, that's going to mean us who can stepping up to support individual stations. In the long term, we have to find a different and better way of doing this. The commercial system is showing us, especially in this moment, that they do not have the fortitude to stand up to what's happening. We're going to have to invest in non-commercial outlets, in non-commercial media of all kinds, and media, most especially, as Peggy emphasized, that is grounded in community. That looks like the people from the community, talks with the accents of the people in the community, and speaks directly to the members of that community. That's what we really have to focus on. And then maybe these debates like this will have a different outcome if we really put our energy into those fights.
Craig, Aaron is. Oh, real quick, Peggy, we have just a couple
Real
seconds
quick.
left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Many years ago, when I was at NPR, some white man was talking to me, and he said, we shouldn't have natives covering native issues. We shouldn't have black people covering black issues. And I asked him then, why do we have white people covering white men issues?
Wow.
That's what you lose. You lose the ability of our communities to speak to each other. All of our community speaking to each other and together. And I know you've got to leave. Thank you, Craig, for all that you're doing too.
Oh, wow. What a story, Peggy. Thank you so much for joining us. Peggy Berryhill is a member of the Muskogee Nation. She has been at this for a long time. She joined KPFA back in 1972. Peggy Berryhill is owner and manager of KGUA in Gualala, California. Craig Aaron is president and co-CEO of Free Press. Craig and Peggy, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for doing this, Rose. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rose. Keep it
Thank
up.
you. And thanks to Kevin Vance, who engineered our show today. Kevin is also a very long-time employee of public radio. Thank you so much for your great work, Kevin. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.